Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, one of my favorite parts of Summer League is kind of recapping everything we've seen, and I do it every year with Fran Fraschilla, except for last year when we were both, like everybody else, huddled in, hunkered down, dealing with COVID. Summer League, though, is back in Las Vegas. Fran is back in Las Vegas. I am back in Las Vegas, and we are back once again to talk about everything we've seen in this Summer League. Fran, good to catch up with you again.
Chris, always a pleasure. I have not had a lot of time off. TBT to the Olympics, to Summer League, and can't wait for Wednesday.
How have you enjoyed the basketball tournament? I'm actually a little bit surprised at how successful it's been. Like, I kind of saw it as a gimmicky thing early on. I'm like, all right, maybe it's got a niche audience. But yeah, it seems to have gained some traction.
The reason it's so good, by the way, Boston guy, John Mugar, is the brains behind this. The reason it's turned out to be so good is it's reality TV meets high-level basketball. And when I say high-level, almost all the guys that play in the TBT, first of all, it's 64 teams, winner take all, $1 million. So that's the reality TV part of it, Chris. The fact that when you get to the Elite Eight, the Final Four, the championship game, the pressure is incredible. I'm just telling you, it's palpable. Literally every possession of the championship game is played like an all-out war. But the beauty behind all this is that the level of play is really high because you have a lot of former college players who you and I remember from their days as college players who have either been fringe NBA players, really good G League guys, or making a great living overseas. And so a 27-year-old guy that played at Ohio State like Aaron Kraft, William Buford, some guy from Marquette like Travis Diener, they're actually better than they were in college. And so the shot making is great, and it has been a blast, and I love being a part of it. If it wasn't high-level basketball, I wouldn't be so enthused about it.
No, it's been really fun to watch, and this past year, no exception. All right, I want to jump into some Summer League stuff, and I want to start, Fran, right at the top with the top three guys. I wrote about this a little bit last week over at SI.com where – I think, you know, 5 years from now, we're probably going to have a pretty interesting discussion about these top three picks: Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, and Evan Mobley. In Cade Cunningham, I see a player that is can't miss in a way. Like, I think he's going to be a regular rotation player no matter what. I think he has the potential to be way better than that, of course. Like, all-star, all-NBA, all those things. But I don't see how Cade Cunningham is not a pretty high-level starter on your team. The difference I see in Cunningham and Jalen Green is that I think Jalen Green has superstar potential. I think Jalen Green, I think he's going to be the winner of Rookie of the Year because he's going to put up some incredible numbers this year in Houston. And I think as his body fills out, when you look at the skill set and the shot-making ability and how he gets to the basket and all the things you know that are going to improve with him in the years to come, I think he has the highest ceiling of all three. Mobley, to me, is the biggest question mark. I look at Evan Mobley, and I see not unique talents, that's probably too strong, but rare talents in a big man. Chris Bosh-like talents in a big man. Maybe better passer than Chris Bosh was at different points in his career. But I don't see a lot of aggressiveness in him, and I wonder if that's going to cost him. Physicality, he's got to get stronger, all those things as well. But the mental toughness that I think you need to see from great players, I haven't seen that yet, either in college or at this summer league, from Evan Mobley. So give me your take on the top three guys, and I'll kind of follow up with you.
I agreed on it. I agree with everything you said. Now, the thing about Cade Cunningham, and that's a guy I watched very closely because I cover the Big 12, and I know the program really well. And, of course, I also have lived in Dallas many years, and I know Cade from back then. The thing about Cade that I think you have to understand, the reason I think he was the number one pick is he was the safest pick of the guys you mentioned. Plug him in right away, high skill level. But I will say this about Cade that I think people still continue to overlook. His feel for the game and his ability to make his teammates better, I think is going to be his greatest strength in the league. I think it's incumbent upon Troy Weaver, who, by the way, has had two great drafts, in my opinion. And they have they're stockpiling some nice young players, nice pieces. I think Cade Cunningham's greatest strength, Chris, is going to be that when they put more talent around him and free agents decide that that's a destination, that he is actually going to his ability is going to be enhanced. Incredible IQ for the game. Great passer, great in pick and roll, actually a really good off ball defender. He just has a knack. He has an it factor. So that I love about him, which I think is his greatest strength. In Jalen Green, couldn't agree more. We're talking Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, Dame Lillard, 28 points a game, probably by the time he's in his second or third year in the league. I love all that about him. I think he's a transcendent talent. The question for me is, like Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal, is that talent going to be good enough to make Houston a winning franchise? And the answer is probably no. It's going to take, draft picks. It's going to take free agents. So, and Evan Mobley, I have to tell you, I love everything about him except what you say. I worry about his lower body strength. He's been pushed around in college. He's been pushed around in summer league. And I do wonder about this motor, not a motor, because he's an amazing kid. But I do think that eventually the aggressiveness has to really like take over. And at some point, is it going to be when he's 23 or 24 that he decides I have to dominate games? The jury's out on that. The talent is unquestionable, but I think the intensity level with which he plays, I think, is probably going to be a function of his physical maturity.
You know, I had one scout from a team that was kind of down on Mobley say this about him. He told me that he watched him play back in January against Utah, and he played 32 minutes in that game and didn't attempt a shot. And this guy's like, I've never seen a great player go 32 minutes and not attempt a shot. He also pointed out the game against Kansas in the tournament where they won big, USC did, but he's guarded by 6'5" Marcus Garrett in that game. And he only had 10 points in that. These to the guys I talked to, or at least this one scout who's a pretty smart guy. This was a red flag. These were red flags with him on Evan Mobley. Do you see them as potential red flags?
I think I'd say potential red flag. I don't disagree with any of that. I also think that he played on a team this year where they forgot, the other guys on the team forgot that they were playing with a top three pick. Like, they didn't really play through him a lot. You can blame him for some of that and that lack of aggressiveness that we're talking about. And I think you actually can blame the team. And I love Andy Enfield, and he's got a kid that was a top three pick. So obviously he did something right. But I don't disagree with any of that. I think the biggest question with Evan is the physical maturity going to kick in at some point when he's 21, 22, 23? And will that then spur him to like say, hey, I can dominate NBA games? And I think that's going to happen, but I think it's definitely, I wouldn't call it a red flag. I would just say a question mark right now.
I think he's on the right team, friend, though, because the Cavs last year when they were healthy, which was for like about a minute and a half, like when they were healthy, they had Kevin Love, they had Larry Nance, and they like to play through their bigs on the elbow. And that seems to be exactly where Evan Mobley is most comfortable. And I saw flashes of it in some of these summer league games where he's collecting the ball at the elbow and he's either making a mid-range jump shot or finding guys on backdoor cuts. I think he can have a lot of success in this Cavs system.
I totally agree. I think that I think that the marriage with him and Jared Allen is going to be a good one because Jared
You do.
Is
so really- you think Mobley that's a question I have too. I mean, you know, when you put 2 7-footers alongside each other, there's a higher level of it not working. I mean, hell, Jared Allen didn't work with Andre Drummond. They're different players, but you know, 7-footers together are tough sometimes.
No, I think you're right. And see, I think they're gonna be fine because the way the NBA game has gravitated, as you've seen the last decade or so, probably last 5 years, is the ability for bigs like Jokic and others to play away from the basket and actually be facilitators, point centers, if you will. Now, he has some of that ability. I also think one of the things that's never talked about throughout the draft process by people is, the coaching fit. Like right now, J.B. Bickerstaff, it's on him. The clock's on. He's on the clock to do two things. Develop his young talent, because it's on him and his coaches, and also to come up with a scheme that fits both players. And I think it's not hard because in Mobley, you have a kid that is going to be a 3-point shooter at some point because his stroke is nice. Feel for the game away from the basket, ability to put it on the floor and beat the guys his size. So I think it's going to be a fit, but it's up to the coach to make it work. I'm always amazed when I see some NBA teams not have former coaches on their scouting staff, because I would want people in my draft room to say, hey, look, the way we play. And I remember when I coached, you know, I'm just not me particularly, but a former coach, we played these two similar players this way. And I really think it's important for JB Bickerstaff and that staff now to figure out the best way to play them together. But the skill sets are complementary, in my opinion.
What do you think of Mobley's ability to defend on the perimeter? I've heard good things about it, but in today's NBA, if you are going to play him at power forward, you're talking about a matchup against like Jaylen Brown in Boston or Tobias Harris in Philadelphia. These guys are not your typical power forwards. They're 3-point shooters who play off the dribble beginning beyond the line.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a concern because remember when you're talking about a kid like this kid with a 7+ wingspan, he moves his feet well enough that he can also space shoot 2 or 3 feet and go ahead and shoot it over him, because that's not going to be easy. So I think, and he's a very bright kid. He comes from an amazing family. So I don't think the defensive end is going to be a problem on the perimeter. I think early on, there's no way he can defend power guys, of which there are few. We understand that in the league right now. But I think the physical maturity from a strength standpoint is going to be the most crucial aspect of his development, but not the footwork, not the defense, not any of the offensive stuff away from the basket.
Yeah, he seems to get that too. I mean, look, every player that comes into the NBA, they have to get in the weight room. Very rarely do you see LeBron or Dwight Howard come into the NBA where they're just so big already that they have to do it. So he gets that. I've heard him say, like, I plan to live in the weight room, but that'll be fun to watch during the year. To go back to Green for a second, that's a interesting team, friend. Like that has like headache for Steven Silas written all over it, where you've got Jalen Green, Kevin Porter, Christian Wood, a bunch of young guys that are, you know, I mean, looking to get numbers. I mean, Josh Christopher makes that team. It's another guy that you add to that kind of mix. I mean, that's I wonder if they embrace kind of a ball sharing philosophy, or do they kind of go into with your turn, my turn mentality?
No, I think that's up to Steven Silas, who I love, you know, former Brown star and St. Thomas More prep guy. I love their draft, but the problem is like, I wouldn't want them to play BYU in the NCAA tournament with the 24-year-old Mormon kids back from missions, because you know, if you look at all those kids, I love Josh Christopher now, because I think he was on a dysfunctional Arizona State team last year with a lot of guys that needed the ball. The thing I know about Josh and what I've seen in this summer league so far is he really believes he should have been the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much confidence he plays with. But I don't have any issue with those kids playing together, because they have no NBA talent right now. Essentially none. I mean, you know, Christian Wood, obviously, and Kevin Porter, maybe 50 points in an NBA game is something not to sneeze about. But they're not going to win early because they're just too young. But as far as pieces for the future, and I hope Raphael Stone's there, is there. I hope Steven Silas is still there. I think they've had a terrific draft. I've always liked Şengün. Because when I talk to my friends in Turkey, and especially former players, guys like Kyle Wilcher, for example, Ahmad Embay, who played at Oklahoma, who I know well, played in Turkey this year. That kid was the MVP at 18 years old in a league that is the second best domestic league in Europe right now, in my opinion, behind Spain. And there were 30 former NBA players in that league, Shane Larkin being one of them. And so that's going to translate somewhat. He still has his deficiencies. But overall, I like it as a draft for Houston. But now it's up to Steven Silas to sort out how to get these young players to learn how to be NBA players and eventually learn how to play together.
So let's do Şengün now, because he was on my list I was going to get to. But since you mentioned him, one of the breakout guys, or standout guys at least, of this summer league, you know,
of AAA. He made the AAA All-Star team.
He did.
That's what this is. This is Pawtucket.
And this was one of those guys, friend, that a lot of people had projected inside top 12-ish. He slips down into number 16. That pick was traded multiple times before it eventually settled in the hands of Houston. Boston originally had it. I got to tell you, someone from Boston, I'm sitting there watching Şengün play. I'm like, gee, you think the Celtics would use a three-point shooting big man with all those skills? Like, that seemed obvious. But again, summer league statistics are meaningless. We should point that out. But yes, he looks like he has some real NBA skill. What do you think people were missing on him early on?
Well, I think a couple things. Number one, the trend of the league to go to positionless and, you know, versatility and things of that nature. But then, you know, I know this Magic team fairly well, and I watched Nick Vucevic for 2 years become a really good NBA player. And, you know, Nick's not your classic NBA, you know, all-star, which he's been twice now. So in Şengün, I think you just have to, again, be creative. You know, one thing I learned about basketball, and I can't believe I'm saying this in over 40 years now, is that it's all cyclical. And we all were playing positionless at Manhattan College, you know, mid-major, because I had 6'4" power forwards, you know. And so the small ball stuff, Draymond Green, small ball, positionless. No, this is part of basketball. It evolves. It's circular. It comes back in vogue. And I think kids like Şengün just have to find their place in the league because, you know, he's a kid with a great feel for the game. He has great rebounding instincts. He can pass the ball. Eventually, he's going to be able to shoot the three. Trust me on that. It's not going to be an issue. And he's actually moved his feet a little better than people thought. So I just think you have to cut. What I think the biggest thing with international kids, Chris, that you and I have learned over the last decade is, tell me what league he's playing in and how's he playing? Because if you're doing it in Spain, like, we should have figured this out. I had 8-1 and Doncic too. But what we should have figured out is the ACB is a really, really good basketball league, you know, right below the NBA. And so when a kid is dominating in Turkey the way Şengün did as an 18-year-old, we should have probably been a little more aware earlier. But remember now, it wasn't really till the last 2 months that he rose up the draft boards.
Yeah, I think that's often, when I talk to team executives, one of the most difficult things about evaluating international players, which is looking at the league they play in. I mean, you can go back to Giannis playing in, they were using the second Greek league there. And I remember talking to people around draft night where it's like, he's kind of playing against guys that you see at the Y in a way. Like, he's dominating.
It was high level high school that he played in second division.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe the same thing is true for Şengün. Like, they don't know what they're looking at with the Turkish league. But I feel like sometimes, I always say this, friend, sometimes just believe your eyes. Like, if the guy is playing at a high level, in a high-level league in Turkey, maybe he's got a pretty big upside. And everything I've seen from Sengun, when I watched the first game, he outplayed Evan Mobley in that first game. This guy looks like he's got the tools to be an NBA center.
You know, you know Jonas Jerebko well. And Jonas, not a great NBA player, but a big physical kid. If he would have shot it better, he'd probably still be in the league. But I saw him in February, Sengun. It was Turkey and Sweden in a European qualifier. He mauled Jonas Jerebko. I'm talking about mauled him. And I talked to a couple of former American players who are over there, and they said, you don't realize how strong this kid is. This kid is an ox. So, again, he's going to have some deficiencies, but I think to get drafted at 17 and what Houston's doing, they did really well to get him at 17.
No, I think they – right now, I would pick them as the big winner out of the draft. Jalen Green at number two, superstar potential. Sengun could be a starter in this league, at least from what we've seen.
And Garuba. Garuba, yep. We haven't seen Garuba yet because he was with the Olympic team with Spain.
That's true. Another guy that could add to that. It's just kind of weird, Frank, because the Rockets, they don't usually draft anybody. So it's like,
I know. Well, it's a whole new regime. And believe me, they're not winning games with 19-year-olds. You and I both know that.
There's prospects here at Summer League in a Rockets uniform. I'm not used to seeing that, at least not in the Daryl Morey era, rather. All right, let me go back to the top of the draft for a second. On draft night, when the Raptors are sitting there on the clock and they draft Scottie Barnes, what was your reaction?
Holy mackerel, the Magic got a break. Finally, the Magic got a break. You know, they were supposed to have a top three pick. They slid to five. And I trust Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster. They do a great job of evaluating talent. My biggest thing with Scottie Barnes, and there's so many things to like about him, including, again, with all these kids, incredible character coming into the league, USA Basketball, the whole deal. I know a number of teams who worked him out and said he just didn't make any shots. You know, one team said that we put him in a three-point shooting drill and he made 33 out of 100 with nobody guarding him. And I really worried about that. The other thing, Chris, that I worried about, and everybody says, listen, again, I don't want to denigrate him, but because some of the things he's done in summer league have really translated well. But the other thing is, just because you're a willing passer, which he is at 6'9", doesn't mean you're an on-time, on-target passer. And I saw even at Florida State, guys would be open in a corner and the ball would land at a guy's feet or had to jump up over his head. So, I think Orlando was fortunate because I've always been a Jalen Suggs guy. High-level competitor, high-level athlete, I think a high level of skill, prototypical point guard at 6'4", and born leader. And I think that's where we're going to find out like 2 or 3 years from now, because I think you got to always give these kids 2 or 3 years. Boy, did Orlando get lucky, or was Masai right on the money again, the way he's been with other guys in the draft? And maybe because of the way they play in Toronto with OG, and maybe Siakam is still there. We don't know yet that he's got 3 6'9" guys that can defend like the 2, 3, and the 4. So there's always a method to people's madness in the league with teams that I trust know what they're doing.
Yeah,
except for Bruno Capoco.
Correct. There you go. Bring up an old friend. I was surprised they passed two because they had such success with the Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry backcourt. They knew Lowry was gone. You plug Suggs in there, he becomes the new Kyle Lowry. Some similarities, frankly, to their games. I mean, you know, both physical defensive players. I think Suggs probably a better athlete, you know, especially when it comes to getting to the rim, scoring at the rim. And I've watched him, Fran, at this summer league, and he's done everything I expected him to do. And when I, you know, exchanged messages with people in Orlando, I mean, they're practically giddy about what they have here. Like, they couldn't be more excited. They see a big future with Suggs playing alongside Markel Fultz. They see a two-way player that's only going to get better in the areas he's slightly deficient right now, three-point shooting, whatever the usual things rookies come in with. I mean, I'm not yet, to your point, I'm not yet seeing what Toronto clearly saw. I'm not seeing the difference between Scottie Barnes and Jalen Suggs. Right now I'm seeing Jalen Suggs as a guy that might be close to can't miss at this point, and Scottie Barnes is still something of an unknown.
I would agree with that. And again, you and I both could be wrong, Yeah. But I felt that way. And again, you know, and I, and a little minor vested interest in Orlando because my son is there with the staff. And that's what I thought. As soon as Scotty Barnes went to Toronto, I said, wow, John Hammond, Jeff Weltman, they get all this criticism for drafting length, even though John drafted Giannis. Right. Sure. But, you know, you got Isaac back. You got Okiki's going to be OK. Mo Bamba is with the team now. You know, RJ Hampton averaged 11 points a game in those last part of the season. I think they've got 10 guys under 23, which means they're not winning either this year. Okay. But at least with Suggs and some of the other complimentary pieces, there's hope in Orlando. And, you know, Mark Few told me last October, we've never had a kid this competitive. He goes, I've been here 21 years and as a head coach, and we've never had a kid this competitive. And I think that's going to be his calling card in the league.
You know, shown good leadership too. I think when he had to step out, somebody asked, you know, with the injury, somebody asked him, you know, disappointed. He's like, well, I can still be there for my teammates on the bench. I can still be supportive on the bench. Well, that's pretty impressive for a kid at Summer League. So,
you know, it's like Cade Cunningham. I told you he's got that emotional intelligence about teammates. I think Jalen Suggs, he reminds me, you know, people don't agree with this, but because people say, oh, he's Jason Kidd or he's this guy. And I never mind comparisons. I never mind that, because how do you take a young player in a film room and say, you know, like if you're John Kuminga, I'm going to show him Kawhi Leonard tape. Why not? We want you to be like Kawhi. We want you to be like Jimmy Butler. But with Jalen Suggs, he reminds me of a mid to late career Chauncey Billups. Two-way guy. He's not really a one or a two. Jalen's big enough to play off the ball. He's a terrific defender, great competitor, great leader. And that's kind of where I see him going if I'm correct, if I'm on the right track.
Yeah, no, I think you are. I want to talk about Boston for a second. The Celtics brought, you know, like a third of their NBA roster down here. Peyton Pritchard was down to play. Aaron Nesmith was down to play. Romeo Langford was down to play. A couple of the guys as well. But I want to focus on those three because, you know, the Celtics, I think they got really lucky in getting Dennis Schroeder at the price point that they did. Yes. He is going to help them right away. But that backcourt is still relatively thin. And where it's not, it's full of young players, specifically those three guys that I mentioned. Pritchard came down here with a really aggressive attitude. Like, he was just gunning. Like, he had a couple of games where he had double-digit three-point attempts. Nesmith struggled in the opener but came back and played really well in his second game. He is, as you've seen in college, a proven three-point shooter. I don't know what to make of Romeo Langford anymore. I mean, he's been injured his first couple of years, had flashes last season, but it's probably make or break for him with the Celtics this year. But of those three guys I just mentioned, as far as being able to help your team, like if you had to take one of them off and like make him a part of your rotation, who are you most bullish on amongst those three guys?
I think Nesmith, just because he's got the size and the one, you know, and Peyton's turned out to have a really good first year plus. But I think Nesmith, because he's 6'7", and he's got great shooting range, and you know, you can plug him in to a team around him with the great players they have, and he can be a solid contributor. What I would say about Summer League with those three guys, what I love about it is, and what people don't realize is, once the NBA season ends, I mentioned player development a couple times now. The player development guys grab these guys. I guarantee you, not having talked to anybody, that they probably were in the gym all, you know, the last 3 months. And now you get to Summer League and you say, like, the average fan will say, well, why is he shooting so much? Or why is this guy so aggressive? Well, because you can't be aggressive when you're playing with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And so what you find out in Summer League, especially with the second year guys, and that's the theme of Summer League this year, is all these second year guys that didn't have a Summer League last year or a long training camp, is you put the work in behind the scenes. Let's see what you got in the summer. And I think that's the beauty of what the Celtics did with these three guys. But I think Nesmith, to me, probably has that most upside. And I think Peyton Pritchard's going to be in the league 10 years. He's going to be TJ McConnell. He's going to be Steve Blake. He's going to be Monte Morris. He's going to be one of those guys that you always know you can count on him when you have to play him, you know, serious minutes. But I think Nesmith is the guy that really needs to step into a role where he's a, you know, proven primetime NBA player someday.
Yeah, what I like about Pritchard is that at the 26th pick in the draft, where they grabbed him a year ago, if you can get a guy that's part of your rotation, you win. Like, that is, no matter what, that's a big win. I completely agree on Neesmith. I kind of anticipated last year, friend, Neesmith having a slow start, in part because of the cluster of a schedule coming in, the abbreviated training camp, but he also missed what the last half of his last college season with that foot injury. So he wasn't hitting the ground running when he joined up with Boston. But, you know, being around that team a lot, I saw a guy shoot 42% from three in February. He shot 40% from three in the last full month of the season. He shot 50-something percent in college in that last year that he was at Vanderbilt. Like, that's a real shot. That's a real shot. And watching him at the summer league, he's clearly put on a little bit more muscle. He's a solid 6'6". We talked about positionless, and that's true, but when you can get a guy that can float between the two and the three and do it effectively, you're going to be a player in this league. What worried me a little bit is I still don't see the defensive intensity out of Neesmith yet. And and we talked about motor with Evan Mobley. Defensively, I'm still waiting to see some of that motor with Aaron Neesmith, because if you can't play, especially now for Ime Udoka, who's a defensive-minded guy, if you're not going to defend on a team where you have Marcus Smart, Josh Richardson, others that can play defense, you're going to have a problem staying on the floor.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And, you know, knowing what I know about Aaron Neesmith and his background, he's a wonderful kid, great family, Charleston, South Carolina, same high school as Chris Middleton. But again, I'm going to put it on the coaches, because there's no question he's a high character kid. It's now up to Ime and that staff to motivate him to say, look, if you want to get 26 minutes a night, you need to defend your position. So I not that I put it on coaches, but I think that's our job. You know, that's what a coach's job is, to take a kid like Neesmith. You know, I always laugh when people say, as with first round picks, well, he's got to get better defensively. They all do. Unless you're Davion Mitchell, and why is he getting so much attention? Well, because he's the rare guy that was a great defender in college and it carried over. But most of these guys are told not to get in foul trouble in college, you know, and you need to keep you on the court. I used to tell guys, if you know, like when a guy picked up a first foul for me early in the game, I said, I don't care if your man scores, we need you on the court. Like, you're going to get us 14 at the half. Just don't give up 14. And so when they get to the NBA and they're guarding the best players in the world, it's got to be not only a mindset, but you got to be taught how to play within a team structure defensively. And that's on the coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's going to be a big key for Neesmith in this second year. If he can defend even at a reasonable level, his shooting is going to keep him out there on the floor. A couple of things I want to hit you on before I let you go. Jalen Johnson in Atlanta. Hawks look like they might have had something here. He's putting up some numbers at Summer League. I mean, there was this perception around Jalen Johnson. Maybe it was publicly and not internally amongst teams. I don't know that teams care all that much about a player deciding, like, I'm not going to play college basketball anymore. I'm going to focus on the NBA. I know Duke fans do. They were probably pretty pissed at Jalen Johnson last season. But, you know, I remember talking to Jalen during the pre-draft process, and one thing he said was, you know, people talking ish about me need to stop. Like, I'm not a bad guy. I just made a choice, and you know, that's my decision. But it turns out Atlanta, which has been stockpiling young talent, and Travis Schlenk has been really good at identifying that young talent, maybe they have something here in Jalen Johnson.
Oh yeah. Well, I watched him close up the other night, and I mean, the one thing that stands out is, you know, the first thing you do when you watch Jalen Johnson move up the floor two or three possessions is, you say NBA player. You know, you look at the size and the length, and then to see him do some of the things he's done here. And that's what jumps out at me, is NBA player. Not like, oh, he's trying to make the league, or, hey, George Niang, my good buddy from one of the greatest players to ever come out of the Merrimack Valley. You know, you go, oh, I hope George can work hard. Maybe he can make a team and develop. There's a lot of guys in the league like that. With this kid, you go NBA player. And so I've been impressed. And I think teams, to your point, they get such great background intel that, although I did have a scout tell me during the season, they lost down at Miami, and the one thing he said to me was, boy, is that kid soft. That's probably the only knock on him. It was never athleticism, skill level, but it was, boy, he's soft. He plays soft. So, and again, because of the age of these guys, Chris, they mature at different rates. And maybe that was a wake-up call when he leaves Duke and people are crushing him on the mock drafts and the, you know, the social media. And, you know, the light came on, apparently, because it is summer league. But Travis Schlenk, man, they've knocked it out of the park going back to Herter and obviously Trey Young and the guys they've drafted. So kudos to them.
Yeah, they've got a really good young team. It looks like Johnson, you know, maybe not this year, probably spent a lot of time in the G League this year, right, but could be a part of it down the line. You know who's not shy at Summer League? Cam Thomas. I watched him the other night, too. Like, yeah. I hadn't seen much of him, friend. You've obviously seen a lot more, but, like, he's just out there gunning. Like, he is not afraid with the ball, which maybe is kind of, yeah, he's not going to play probably for Brooklyn this year, but maybe that's the kind of guy they need coming off the bench down the line to go get you buckets.
You know, it reminds me of Talen Horton Tucker in this regard. Like, I thought Talen Horton Tucker should have stayed in school when he got drafted by the Lakers mid-second round. But I said, because I watched him a lot with Halliburton and Mario Shayok and that group. But I said, he's going to the perfect team because the kid is going to grow up quickly in that professional environment around LeBron and company. And I think for Cam Thomas, he can't be going to a better place. He's not going to play much this year unless there's a lot of injuries. But because he's going with KD and Patty Mills, who I think is the steal of the free agency this summer, you know, and obviously Kyrie and James Harden, I think Cam Thomas is there's going to be some great one-on-one games and ish talking. You know, pre-practice with Cam Thomas going up against, you know, Harden and KD and those guys. I think they're going to school him well, and not to mention Steve Nash and the staff they've got.
Mm-hmm. A couple second rounders I want to ask you about, because this is always where do we find a potential steal. Miles McBride in New York, he's played pretty well. He seems like a Tibbs kind of guy, like defensively, like digs in. You know, if you can defend, you always kind of find a home with Tom Thibodeau. What do you think about McBride?
Well, I go way back on Miles McBride to my Ohio University and Ohio State days, Cincinnati Moeller High School, great football, recently great basketball. Here's the interesting thing about Miles McBride. He obviously went to the right team. You play for Bob Huggins and then you play for Tibbs. You know, in some ways it's going to be maybe easier. But his dad, Walt, who played at Xavier, here's what I'm going to want you to think about. I was hoping he'd stay another year because I think next year he would have been a top 15 pick. And his dad felt the same way, that he should stay another year. But Miles bet on himself, and he's obviously going to the right place. The only concern about Miles I have is there's a logjam in New York. Maybe he plays sooner than I think he plays, but I wish that he'd waited another year, been that top 15 pick. The investment would have been, he would have been going to a team where he was going to play early in his career. The only negative is that they've got a lot of guys, in the backcourt, with Quickly and, you know, Rose and, Fournier is going to swing and a couple other guys I can't think offhand, but I know they're loaded there. But I love the kid. He's a lot like Suggs, former high school football quarterback, great shooter, tough kid, intense competitor, and a Tibbs guy. Quentin Grimes, who I also know well, at 26, I think, or 25, and McBride at 36, you couldn't ask for two better Tibbs guys, particularly for where they drafted him.
And to go back to Atlanta for a second, yeah. Sharif Cooper. I don't think people thought he could shoot coming into this draft. He's played pretty damn well in this summer league. And I mean, he was all over social media the first couple of days with his shot making, and everyone's kind of really surprised. Like, why did he slide, in your opinion?
Well, he only played, like, off the top of my head, he only played 12 games because the NCAA ruled him ineligible until like mid-January. And then when he came on the scene, he just took SEC by storm. He is a dynamic little guard. And, you know, he's an outlier because of his size, but he's what I call, especially with that team. And again, he's going to spend time with the G League team, I believe. But he in time is going to be a game changing second unit point guard. Assuming he stays in Atlanta, he's not going to start because of Trey. But he's like what I call a third down back. He's like Darren Sproles, who played a long time in the NFL. I think Sharif, because of his speed and great passing ability, I'm not sold on the shooting yet, small sample size, but I do think his dynamic speed and passing ability is a game changer as an off the bench guy. And to get him in the second round, I'll tell you something crazy, Chris. Had he stayed at Auburn with the team they have some first round picks on that front line, I think Sharif Cooper would have had a chance to be National Player of the Year this year in college basketball. That's how dynamic he is, and because of the team he was playing with. But to get him in the second round, local kid from Atlanta, hey, again, another guy that I think Travis did well with.
Yeah, no question. Last thing for you. Back to the top of the draft for a second. I think Sam Presti is one of the best GMs, if not the best GM in the NBA. But you had Scottie Barnes at four. We kind of go, okay, Masai, you maybe know something we don't. At six, Josh Giddey sitting there. Haven't seen almost anything from him. Went out 5 minutes in with an ankle injury in this summer league. But that was someone that scratched, you know, raised some eyebrows a little bit at that spot. What did you think of that pick, and what do you think of Josh?
Well, first of all, I watched Jonathan Kuminga last night. We called that game, and that might end up being I wouldn't say all timer, but I think the Warriors either for like I have people. I still think. Let me just jump around real quickly. Mm-hmm. I still think that the idea that Kuminga and Moody have played so well for the Warriors makes them even more valuable in a trade right now.
Yeah.
You know, and it may not be both of them. It may be Wiggins and Moody or Wiggins and Kuminga. But, like, whoever might be involved in a trade to get a veteran, like a Ben Simmons, might be saying, oh, my God, we can get Kuminga, you know, at seven, you know, as a future building block. So, again, Kuminga lasted till seven, and Sam passed on him. I like Josh Giddey. I don't love him. I like him a lot. I love Aussies. I love his toughness. I love that he was 18 playing in a man's league. And I think also the recency bias of LaMelo playing in that league helps Josh Giddey. And I think the world of Sam Presti. I don't see superstardom there. I see solid. I think the shooting has got to be more consistent. But hey, I'm going to give Sam the benefit of the doubt because he's a 6'8" point guard who's just turned 19. And he can really see the floor, and that size will help him. And I don't really have an argument unless Kuminga turns out to be Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, well, two things there. One, Sam was, as most people know by now, one of the driving forces behind Tony Parker, who had a lot of the same background, an 18-year-old playing in a man's league in Paris. So that's he likes those types of guys. And with Kuminga, there was one general manager in the G League bubble back in February, and that was Sam Presti. He was there for almost the entire time. So he got a bird's eye view at Jonathan Kuminga. He saw the G League night practice. He saw them play. So if anyone is – they only played like, what, 8 or 9 games. But if anyone is able to assess Kuminga – at the best of his ability, not to say he can't make a mistake, it's probably Sam Presti because he saw that guy play. So those two things made me think, like, maybe 5 years from now, we're like, Sam did it again. He knew something
weeks,
we didn't.
He spent 3 weeks in Australia the way he did in the bubble. See what I mean? And by the way, let's give Sam credit for Russell Westbrook, too, the number four pick in the draft that year, who a lot of people mocked briefly, and the rest is history. So, yeah, I love the Aussies. Coming off the Olympics, I love them even more. Patty Mills, you know, and Ingles. But I think for what Josh did as an 18-year-old in that league where, you know, people were trying to come at him and beat him up and be physical with him, he did a great job. And I can't agree more about Sam, so that's why I'm probably wrong. And I mean that sincerely. Yeah. I don't watch 30 or 40 NBA games. That's why I can't ever do a mock draft because, you know, I'd rather watch K-State play Baylor on a Tuesday night instead of like the Warriors play the Trailblazers. And so, you know, Sam certainly is far more advanced in that regard with Josh and Kuminga than I would be.
I mean, you could have picked a better example, like Damian Lillard versus Steph Curry is a pretty good matchup. Well,
that's true. That's true. No, and I do tune in, but I think I'm anxious to see what Oklahoma City is doing over the next 3 to 4 years. That's something that I'm going to be curious about.
I mean, you could have said Magic Rockets, you know, on Tuesday. That I could
get on
board.
That's a no-brainer. That's
no question. But again, but you would have watched Magic because your son is down there working for the Magic. So maybe next time we'll come up with a better example. Fran, good luck this week. You can catch Fran on all the ESPN platforms calling the rest of the Summer League action. Always great to do this, Fran. Enjoyed it, and we'll catch up soon.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.